This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of the W12 podcast. And yes, you can tell us a different voice intro today. Ben can't make it. I'm left in charge. This could be a disaster. It could be brilliant. Who knows? But I'm joined by the stat man himself, Mr. Jack Supple. Hello, Jack. You all right?
Yeah, not bad, Dan. Good to be on, mate.
Good, good. We're also joined by Mr. FPL himself, Chris Hermitage. How are you, mate? You all right?
All good, mate. Very happy after Saturday and even more buzzing for this chat we're going to get into.
Excellent, excellent. And last but not least, we've got Harry from Our Insights bringing his youthful exuberance knowledge. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I think buzzing sums it up. Normally, I'm only happy on the Sunday because of the win, but it's actually carried on until the Monday. A huge result, so pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
I know, you're welcome. And just in a minute, we're going to be joined by one of my favourite players from a bit of a random era of QPR, where things were up and down, hit and miss, a lot going on. He scored some stunning goals, some lovely goals. You all know him as the White Pelé, Akos Bouzaki. So here we are, joined by the midfield maestro, legend, Akos Bouzaki. How are you, mate? How have you been?
I'm fine, thank you very much. It's nice to speak with you guys and talk about the good old days. So I'm looking forward to this conversation, of course.
Obviously, before we jump in with the good old days, what have you been up to like recently? Like what you're doing now? Are you involved with football at all? Or
well, it's been a roller coaster the last 10 years after I left football. I was doing my coaching badges in England. I'm done at the level until level 4, and I started to be a coach in Hungary, but I realized that the freedom on the pitch is not always freedom on the bench if you're coaching. So right now, apart from we have a football school in Hungary, that's my father was starting in 1986, and this is the club Grund FC when I grew up. So I'm a owner of the club, and if I want to go back coaching or go to see some kids improving, I can do every day. But right now I'm a little bit moved away from professional football.
Ah, brilliant. It's good to hear that you're like enjoying yourself though after football.
Yes, I do. I always find targets in life and challenges. Most of my life it was on the football pitch, but of course when you stop playing, you will find different challenges even inside your family. You know, when you have two small kids, you have challenges. So I'm glad they're sleeping now.
Yeah, we've had that challenge of getting mine to sleep as well. So I know that pain. Obviously, just wanted to start off. Obviously, you started off your career obviously in Hungary. What was the like Hungarian league like in comparison to say playing in England? Obviously, I know you've played in Portugal as well. Like, what kind of standard of football is it in Hungary?
At the time, when I was 17 years old, 18 years old. As far as I remember, there was only one player, István Kozma, who was playing in England, in the Premier League. At the time, I think that was a rule you know, the players, English club could sign only if they played certain number of national teams. So that was almost impossible to come to England. That was before the European Union. Hungarian was connected to European Union. And after, when I became 22, then that was the year when Hungary going to EU opened the door for players to go to England. And there was four or five players who go straight away. Zoltán Gera, Gábor Király, Sándor Torgella. And I think I was the fourth player who was entered into England. And answering your question, it wasn't even a dream, because you don't dream about things, it's impossible, you know. so at the time it was impossible, and soon as it became possible, that was something unbelievable.
Yeah. Obviously, I know that before you came to England, you were signed by Jose Mourinho at Porto. Obviously, you didn't necessarily get as many opportunities there as you probably would have liked to. But what was it like working under him and being over in Portugal?
Well, you know, every player has got his own path. You know, became a football player, or became a player who he really enjoy himself. When I signed by Porto, I was 20 years old. Before, I only played in MTK and my youth club in Hungary. So I didn't have much of what's the right word? Experience. So to become a Porto player, they signed me for Team B. They didn't sign me for the first team. So that was my first challenge. How could I enter into the first team squad? And I was very fortunate, and I had some opportunities to train with the first team. And as more training, I was taken part of with Porto. They moved me into the first team squad, but at the time that was unbelievable players playing there. It was the midfield was Deco, Costinha, Manish, the Heder Postiga was a striker play. So it was almost impossible. Even on the bench, it was Alenichev, who was a Russian international.
Yeah.
So for me to train with them, that was a big improvement. But as soon as I realized that it's more like I will need playing games. So I needed to find a club where I can play games. Sitting on the bench, age 21, 22, it's not the best. If I can go back in the time, maybe I would change my decision, because when we won the UEFA Cup, I played one game in Turkey, and I played, I think, three games in the league. But I was part of the first team squad, and Mourinho was the coach, and Académica Coimbra, it's a Portuguese first division team, called Porto that they want to loan me for a year. And I went to see José and ask his opinion, you know, what he thinks about this situation. Should I stay? Should I go? And what he said, listen, Ákos, it's I cannot promise you anything. You see our squad. We won the European the UEFA Cup. Next year we're going to Champions League. I can't promise you more opportunity to play in the first team than last year. So I went on loan to Académica, where I had an injury. They've had two coaches has been sacked. And Porto win the Champions League, win the league, win the cup, win everything. Even if I play only three games in the Champions League, probably my CV would look a little bit better.
obviously, so how did your move to England then come about?
So what happened, after 1 year in Academica, I went back to Porto. But at the time, Mourinho left to Chelsea, and it's been a lot of changes in Porto. And I gave myself a half season to push myself back into the first team squad. But I tried really hard, but it just didn't work. So in January, I had an agent, Amadeu Paixão, is the Portuguese agent. And I told him that I think it's time to go from Porto, because it's no point to be in the second team of Porto in 22 years old. So and Plymouth was struggling in the championship, and they were looking for midfield player, and I had to go on trial to Plymouth. And it was strange, because Saturday I left Porto, went to Plymouth. I was training on Tuesday, and we had a friendly game on Wednesday with Plymouth. Only the players who didn't play at the weekend, because it was in January, so you had the season in the middle of the season. So I played in a friendly on Wednesday against Torquay United. I scored and I gave an assist. So they signed me, and Saturday I was starting against Preston United. That's how quick it happened, everything.
So and the rest is history. That's when you made your mark on English football.
That was a first league game against Preston. The second one was West Ham United. Two games we conceded 6 goals and didn't score one. That was my first 2 games.
Obviously, so then you moved on to QPR, obviously initially on loan. How did you find it when you came in on loan? Obviously, I know that things at Plymouth weren't necessarily as smooth as they could have been when you joined us. So was it like a bit of a relief to come to us?
I wouldn't say that. I was in Plymouth for, I think, 2.5 years, something like that. And I had a 6-month... Now, I was in the last year of my contract, and we started to negotiate our contract, but before that was in, I think we in October or maybe in end of September, we played against QPR at Loftus Road, and Plymouth, we won 2-0, and I had a great game, and that was, I think, one of the first games when Flavio took over QPR. And he saw the game, and he liked my style. And in the same time, when we had the negotiation with Plymouth, QPR was coming for me. And to be fair, I had some great time in Plymouth, and I really like to play in Plymouth. But sometimes for a player to become better, need refreshing. Need a new challenge. Need some new targets. Because with Plymouth, the only target was to stay in the championship. We were talking about maybe getting the playoff, and we had some very good group of players. But deep inside, everybody knows that all the best players gonna go. In any time, and that's what Plymouth did. They sold all the best players, and they made a good profit about that. And that what with me they done the same, because I have, I think, 6 months left from my contract, and QPR bought me out.
Yeah,
if I had 6 months, I could go free, but QPR paid for me, and. It's very strange, because I didn't do anything different in QPR than what I did in Plymouth, but when I shoot in Plymouth, it's go on the bar or go five centimeters next to the bar outside, and in QPR, even if I close my eyes and kick the ball, everything goes in.
I was going to say, because the 12 games you had on loan, you scored 6 goals, so you must have done something right.
Yeah, it's just. I don't know what happened. It's just sometimes, like a player, you feel And it's not I'm saying that because I'm talking to you, but for me QPR was the club where I felt amazing. You know, I always feel like this is my club when I play there. I felt the same with Plymouth, but in the players, you know, when I mentioned in the beginning about his path, you know, you have some steps and you are improving, and then in a certain age you get there. And I think for me QPR was at that was my part of professional football when I feel that I'm arrived.
Yeah. Obviously, you mentioned a minute ago about Flavio being taken over just before you joined us. What was your relationship with him like? How, like, we hear lots of stories about how he was at that time. Like, was he as mental as he sounds, or?
Well, how much time have you got? Because I have, of course, it's not a usual owner he was, and it's not hard to say that, but something he was really good. He was a businessman, and when he see an opportunity, he was doing everything to get what he wants. So for him it was a really important investment he made with QPR, because he wanted to prove that he is a top businessman. And I think he's done that, because QPR needed a new investment. He needed some refreshment in the club, because when I come to QPR, we were, I think, 19th position, something like that. So it's just above the bottom, just above the line. and when Briatore came and started signing players, investing money, so we became a mid team. It's no relegation problems. Hope we will say that the same at the end of the season. But and with every club or in the football, you know, you not succeed if you don't invest. So you need a really professional setup. You need a very professional mind, and you need time. You cannot do in one day. You're not gonna do miracles. So you need the way, a professional way, and patience to be better and better and better, and then maybe you can get to the highest level.
Yeah. Obviously, so speaking of patience and time, during your time with us, you had a lot of different managers. So it shows that the chairman necessarily wasn't very patient with them. But obviously, how did you find that, having quite a few different managers?
Well, yeah, because, you know, what Briatore was a strong personality. So he has his idea where he wanna go from QPR from day one on in 2 years' time. And he was making decisions very quick if things doesn't get, because he was feeling that the things he wants to achieve with QPR is not going to happen with this man, this coach, maybe. And then, but the football doesn't work like that a lot of times. But history is history. So we had so many managers, and we had guys maybe three times, Ainsworth. Always caretaker, between the two managers. So it was a strange time, but finally they find the right man to get QPR to the top.
Yeah. Obviously, just before we touch on Neil Warnock and that kind of promotion season, while we're talking about other managers, just wanted to speak about, there was an incident involving yourself and Jim McGilton. Obviously, we heard different reports as fans and everything, of a bit of a bust up, possibly punches thrown, headbutts thrown. Obviously, what actually happened? Can you tell us? Is that what you're happy to talk about?
Well, I'm one thing that everybody knows who knows me, that I'm a very calm person. So I never had a fight in my life. So I always what's the right word to say? With the managers, I know there's a lot of the managers are different. They have different ideas about football, about football players, the type of players they like. Respect. That's the word I was always respectful with all of my coaches. And I know some of the coaches didn't like me. I know some of the coaches like me a lot. But my answer for that always was hard work. And even with Neil Warnock, when we got promoted with Neil Warnock, I know I wasn't his favorite player, but I realized that if I'm good when I had a chance to play, then he had no other chance to play me because he wants to win. Everybody wants to win. With Jim Magilton, it was a different situation because it's not only with me, but with the players who weren't able to react his anger. He was always go after those players, and most of these are foreign players, because if he won't start talking like he talked to me, or he talked to Kaspar Gorks, or sometimes with Adele, he didn't talk to like that to Fitz Hall or Patrick Ajaman or other English players. So he was talking really not very respectful with us. And after the Watford game, it's just the only thing happened, he blamed us to losing the game. I was sub and Adel was sub. I was playing, I think, 25 minutes. I think we lost 2-0 or 3-0 or 3-1, something like that. And we both were subs and we lost. And he blamed me and Adel to losing the game. I just couldn't take it. And I just said, I just answered him back, but he didn't expect that. I didn't say anything bad or I did anything disrespectful, but I wasn't just the guy who was sitting and listening. And I said, what you want me to do? And then he losing it. And then he said all different things, and I just left the dressing room. The unbelievable thing was that all of my teammates were supporting me. Even the English players said, this cannot happen in a dressing room, because players and coaches and the staffs and the directors, you know, you have to sit in the same boat. You cannot have a situation when people doesn't respect each other. And that's what we all the players were told to the directors, to Gianni and Flavio, and after Jim has to leave.
So I mean, Agus, I'm just going to jump in here. I mean, maybe if we talk about managers that you had appreciative of you, you know, were there any QPR managers that maybe, you know, you really got on with and they got the best out of you, you know, any that sort of spring to mind out of the long list that, you know, came and went during your time at QPR?
I wouldn't say that I have to complain about the managers in QPR, because all of the managers, even the ones, probably they wouldn't sign me if I'm not a QPR player. But when you are a player, you need to learn to deal with the difficulties, because if you cannot do that, you're not going to be able to achieve, or you're not going to be able to prove. So if you have a if you have a manager who always plays you, and there is no pressure on you, you need, I think for a player, you need some pressure. And the pressure is when the new manager comes and he leaves you out or he doesn't play you. So now you have a situation. What can you do? You have two options. Or you say the manager is bad, the kit is, the ball is bad, the field is bad, everything is bad, just you are the perfect. Or you look in the mirror and you say, okay, what do I need to change to play? Because that's why we are professional players. I'm not going to move to England from Hungary to sit at home and having some triple chocolate cookies, which I love anyway, by the way. But it's important to play. And some players are not clever enough, and they doesn't see through the big picture. So they're gonna do things which doesn't help their career. And I had some tough coaches. I had Tony Pulis in Plymouth. Everybody knows Tony Pulis. The football player starts from 190. And needs to be strong and direct football, you know, completely different that how I was playing, and I was playing with Tony Pulis, because I went to see him and I asked him, okay Tony, I want to play. Tell me, what do I need to do to be playing? And he said, you need to fight, you need to tackle, you need to, and I said, okay, I try to do that. Of course, I have got my own character, but I was trying to build what he wants me to do together with my positive things which I have, and he realized that this guy is trying, so why don't we give him a chance? Because one thing for sure, every manager wants to win. It doesn't matter who's going to win for him the game. It's the most important is to win the game.
I'm surprised when he had that conversation with Tony Pulis, one of the bits he asked, did you have a long throw? Was that in the, when he got chatting to you?
But, no, don't let me throw the ball.
Well, at QPR, you know, you're obviously very fondly remembered for scoring an unbelievable amount of great goals. I think over half your goals for QPR came from outside the box. You touched on it earlier. We said, everything you hit sort of seemed to go in. You could score with your eyes closed. Did you know, shooting from distance with both feet, may I add, you know, plenty of left-footed goals in there at QPR. Is it something you worked on, or was it just you had a natural gift for striking the ball from range?
No, it was a lot of practice. When I was a young kid, I always go with my father to practicing free kicks. And Even with no net on the goals, we just put a plastic bag, put stones in the plastic bag, and hang in the corner, both sides, far post, near post. I had one ball. We wasn't very very wealthy family, so I had one ball. So one shoot from outside the box, get the ball, go back, get the ball, go back. And I done that until I didn't hit the rocks in the sack, so the rocks fly out, and both sides with both feet.
And so that's the 2-footed comes in, because I was going to ask, yeah, some of those goals you score with your left foot. I mean, yeah,
and of course it wasn't easy, and there's a lot of time. It was so many times I remember it was dark, and my father said, we're gonna go home when you done it, and that was the other thing which teach me to never give up, because finally I hit it, and it was so good feeling after 3 hours, and you are tired, and you're losing your focus, and you're losing the technique, but still you do your repetition, and this is something I was very proud of that, because even with QPR, so many times I spoke with the Kitman Cat. I went there when people doesn't train. I get the balls from Cat, go to the training pitch and practice free kicks and practice kicking, because that was football was my life, my hobby, my love, everything. So for me, I rather go and practice than sit home. And that was, and when you had the situation in the game, you had a chance to shoot. It's, you have maybe even your midfielder maybe 2-3 times one game. So you really need to have a good technique to score from 3 opportunities maybe once. And that's when you have to have the technique right, and you have the self-belief that, okay, now I'm going to shoot this ball. I'm not going to find someone else in a better position, because I know I'm ready to score.
Well, I must say that your era of QPR was a bit of a golden era of midfielders chipping in with like long-range goals. You've got yourself, you've got Ledgerwood, Terat. We were quite spoiled. Rowlands as well, you know, some great strikers with the ball from midfield. I mean, at QPR, do you have a particular goal that stands out as your favourite? You know,
well, I had some special goals with QPR. For me, I think one of the best goal was the goal of the season against Blackpool. But
did you mean it?
Yes, I did. I did mean it. But if you ask me if I could do that again, probably they know. But I think one of my proudest goals was the Wigan goal from free kick in the Premier League. That was my first Premier League goal. And at the time, that's when I started playing with under Mark Hughes, with Neil Warnock. I was always on the bench, never played. I played in the beginning 2 games, and after with all the new signings, I wasn't had many opportunities. And with Mark, he gave me the opportunity. So I was really wanted to score a goal. And that was really special from a free kick to score in the Premier League. So that was a great, great, great moment.
Well, I think like in terms of, you know, Hungarian goal scorers in the Premier League, you're one of a select few. I mean, there's only 4. Do you reckon you could name the other 3 Hungarian players to score in the Premier League?
Yes, of course. Zoltán Gera.
Yep.
Tamás Priskin.
Former QPR teammate.
Yeah. Of course, Szoboszlai now, he was scoring.
Yep, and yourself. That's it, the 4 scorers in Premier League history from Hungary. So you nailed that one. I guess, I mean, just finally, go on.
If I would finish, that would be a much harder question to answer.
I mean, just finally, just on the Premier League aspect, was that, you know, as a growing up, was it something that you aspired to, you know, to move to England, play in the top flight in English football? And, you know, how was it stepping up from the Championship with QPR into the Premier League when you got your opportunities? How did you find it, you know, in terms of competing?
It's interesting because I found to play in the Premier League is easier to play in the Championship when you play. That's important. I mean, to playing is when you have the ball, you have more time. You don't have crazy defenders flying from left and right and coming delayed, and they kick you on both legs, because at the time there was like some of the Championship games were like that. In the Premier League, you had more time with the ball. You have better players around you, so you had better options to play the ball. But if you lose the ball, it was so much harder to get the ball back. So when you had in a good a good day, and most of the our Premier League games that was at home. So if you had a good home game, you can really enjoy playing. But some of the games when you went away, for example, Man United, I think, I don't know if you remember, the 20th minute, Sean Derry was sent off.
Yeah, we still remember that Ashley Young dive.
10 men in Old Trafford. I think I never run as much as I done in that game, and the ball so few times then. It was just chasing without the ball.
You've obviously alluded to the fact that when we're in the Premier League, a lot of our good days came at home. But what was the feeling like towards the end of that first season where we survived? Because we won, obviously, like, I think it's like 5 or 6 home games in a row, but yeah, no one kind of expected us to win. Did you feel anything particularly changed about the team, the club at that time, or it just something came together?
We had the changing the manager, so Mark Hughes came in. He had a different mentality than Neil Warnock had. So he was a little, he come to the players from a different point of attention. He was on the training sessions changed. It was so much sharper, so much modern. Like Neil Warnock was a really men's manager, you know. It's some of the players didn't even train because they didn't have to. In a championship, we had the squad so strong, so it wasn't hard for us to win the championship at the time. But the Premier League is different, and in the Premier League, if you had a bad spell, that could kill you for the season. And what's happened with the lucky thing for us was we had a bad spell in the beginning.
Yeah.
And after Mark Hughes came on, it didn't change anything straight away. But we players could feel that this thing is not a lost case. You know, to stay up is not impossible. Because in December we felt that who are we gonna beat? We cannot beat anybody in this league. And then in January, then when Marcus came and we felt better shaped physically, stronger. We had fitter players, and you start getting some points, and we start winning home games. Win against bigger teams, which give you more confidence. And we had some luck as well at the end, in the last day of the season. But we deserve the luck, I think. So we deserve to stay up. That was my best season.
Your best from a team perspective, or you felt your favorite season at QPR?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
My favorite season, yes. Yeah. Yes. It was so many up, and even with my situation. I don't think you know, guys, but they wanted to loan me at Millwall in January. with Neil Warnock. I was playing in the second team. I wasn't even in the last two games with Neil Warnock, I wasn't even in the squad. So I asked to play games. So I was playing games in the second team, and Millwall asked QPR if they can take me, and QPR said, okay, no problem, just talk with Akos. And they come to me, and I said, no, I want to stay. And a couple of days later, Mark Hughes became the manager. And 2 weeks later, I was playing against Newcastle United away.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, you mentioned earlier about that loan move to Academia and thinking about whether that was the right thing. Maybe that thought process was the same one then. And that's just the way football works, right? Sometimes you make one decision, and or a decision you don't make leads to a good outcome.
Yes, yes. But the thing is, I never wanted to leave QPR.
Yeah, I was gonna ask whether, because when you left us, you were only 30 years old. It's not like you were old. You were still, and you're saying that was after your favourite season. You still showed you had a lot to give us. Obviously, the summer that you did leave, obviously we had a huge change of players, and I think that's the season a lot of QPR fans go back to that changed our club for, well, a lot of negative reasons. But so you obviously wanted to stay. Did you feel the club didn't do enough to try to encourage you to stay and give you a new deal?
You know, to be completely honest, QPR gave me an option. So what's happened? I was playing for QPR, I think, 4 years now, something like that. And I was there when we were in the bottom of the championship. I was there when we stayed up in the Premier League, in the second part of the Premier League season. I was playing every single game. I think maybe one or two games from January until the end of the season. I think only maybe West Brom away I didn't play it, and maybe one more game. But or I was starting, or I was coming in, and I scored two goals. I played like 20 games. So, and I know my contract is finished in the summer. So I came home to Hungary. Before I came home, I was hoping that somebody gonna talk to me about next season. And what's happened? They sent me a notification that they offer me 1 year extension with the same condition I had the last year. And of course, I was an old player, so I didn't have the condition that the new guys had. But for me, it's never been about the money. It's about a little bit of... It hurts me a little bit.
Yeah.
And what the message was that, Akos, you can stay. We gave you the opportunity to stay one more year. But if you leave, then you are free to leave. And a player, I think players needs that that they are a little bit important for the club. You know, why would you stay in a club where you are not really important? They not count with you. And I didn't deserve this kind of situation. I think I was a lot of, I had some injuries and I have some ups and downs. But one thing they cannot take away from me, I always give my heart and everything for QPR.
Yeah, no, I think what you're saying is you wanted to feel wanted, and that's what every player wants, right? I mean, you talk about anybody in their normal job. Like your company, you want your boss to make you feel wanted and everything like that. I mean, yeah, I think we won't touch upon that summer too much, but it felt like a lot kind of from the group that had got us promoted and that had that real core base that I think a lot of fans could relate to. we lost that at that time, and that was just very unfortunate. But is there anyone in the squad from that you played with at QPR that you're still in contact with now?
Well, so H was the one time in Hungary, and we had an unbelievable New Year's Eve. but to be fair, at the last year it was we weren't a real team. It was so many individuals who they doesn't know. So it didn't became. I think the results can show that. You had some good players, but we weren't a team. We couldn't fight for each other. Everybody had his own. Some of the players were end of their career. They just come here to play some games to get some money. Some of the players were not interested. We wasn't clicked the whole group. We were starting clicking with Mark Hughes, and that's how we got promoted. But that's not enough in the Premier League for long term. Maybe you can survive one season, but you need quality and you need togetherness together in the Premier League, and that's how you can have a longer run in the Premier League, like Crystal Palace does. Or Brighton Albion, or even Brentford. Brentford didn't exist when QPR were in the Premier. And they're serious, they had no stadium. They had nothing. And look now, you know, it's strange. You know, things how quick can change. I mean, quick in football language is like 4 or 5 years. But they had the right DNA for the club, and they start building it up, and now they are in the top.
Yeah, and I think that's that's kind of what Luton have got. Whether they'll have enough to survive, like these are obviously clubs we as QPR fans don't kind of like to see do well, because we've obviously had the years of rivalries. But I think we kind of have to respect them that they've done it. I mean, when we're doing badly, all of our fans point to those clubs and go, we need to do what they did. But we'll be back. I've just got one final question, which you kind of mentioned earlier about our current situation, but do you still look out for QPR results and kind of catch any games or highlights whenever you can?
No, of course. I have a soccer results website in Hungary where you can see the little highlights as well. And some of the games has been on the TV recently. I think Sky Sports give it in the UK, or I don't know which how you call now. But if the television give it in England, then the same in Hungary. So it was QPR on the TV a couple of times. And some of the games I fight through watching it.
It's not been great recently, has it, Akos?
I know it's different, you know, watching a game on the television. If you are at the stadium, you know, the atmosphere brings you together, you know, brings you, and you see a different game. But sometimes watching through the television, it's not the best.
Well, you know, they still sometimes sing your song in the stands, even now. Really? Just super random, but you still hear it. And so just the guys have said you've obviously played under a lot of managers at QPR. And with that, there were a lot of players. Do you reckon you could name a five-a-side team from the guys you've played with at QPR?
Of course.
Is that easy, do you reckon?
Yes. It's easy.
Okay,
Radek in the goal, 100%. I think he is fat as now. I don't see him, but you could tell that if he finished playing, he's gonna have a massive bum. So is he going to be in a goal because it's impossible to pass the ball next to him in the net? And Ale Forlin, we need he has a good touch, and he's got a good brain. I would say Kai Walker from Lund. He's got if I lose the ball, I need somebody who run back for me, you know, and he can catch the guy. Ledgerwood, I would take him. You need a strong man in the five-a-side, and I would put Hagusson and me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good player. We've been trying to replace Kyle Walker since he left. Really, we've struggled with getting a good right back in for years and years now. So it was good. It was a good 6 months whilst we had him. And Adele. So wait, did you say Adele didn't? He's not made the team to Rapt.
Well, probably if you ask Adele about a five-a-side, he wouldn't put me in the team. So no, I mean, well, Adele is Adele.
My next question was going to be, what was it like playing with Adele? I thought it was going to be a better response, but now I'm worried what the response is going to be like.
It's you know, when I was 28, I think Adele was 21 or 22.
Mm-hmm.
Quite similar players. He had he's got talent that I never see before. So he's got great feet. He was in the first two steps, he was very quick. He was dribbling good. So he's got everything to become a top player. But his attitude didn't go as high than his talent is. And even like that, he played in Milan, he played in Benfica, he played in Fulham. So he had a great career. Can you imagine if he had a better work ethic? He could be Ronaldinho or something like that. So I wouldn't pick Adele because in my team, I like to play players who are team players.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've got a couple of quick fire questions, but I've rattled them off. So Szoboszlai or Tarapt? But now that one is redundant.
What?
Dominik Szoboszlai or Tarapt? Who would you choose?
Szoboszlai all day long.
Szoboszlai. And you and him are two of the few Hungarians that have played in the Premier League, and both of you can absolutely twat the ball. Is it a Hungarian thing where you... I know you said you practiced it, but are you just born being able to... Well, with a fantastic strike?
Well, but Szoboszlai is 22 years old and he's in Liverpool.
I know, but I'm saying the foot... He's got a foot like a traction engine, so...
Yeah. Does it come from watching Puskás growing up? Is that your idol? Because he could hit a ball as well.
I don't know, but Szoboszlai is quick as fuck as well. But I'm sorry to say that, but I don't know how to be quick. But he's good. He's a player. I was really worried he's get injured because he was playing so many games and coming from Germany to England, the games are so different. And hopefully he's gonna be fit soon and come back playing. But I think for the next 2 years he's gonna be an even better player.
He's good. Clint Hall or Fitz Hall?
Clint.
Yeah. Machine. Yeah. Hungarian food or English food?
Well, Hungarian food.
Okay. Your favorite Prem team?
Favorite right now is Liverpool because of the Szoboszlai.
Okay, fair enough. And the old QPR badge, or the one that they changed it to, or the one that you're wearing on your shirt now, which one? That one or the one when you first joined?
I'm trying to remember the old one.
It's behind. If you look on Chris's, it's behind his head on that shirt. You can see it.
Oh yeah. I see. No, I would say I like traditional things. So for me, if a club has a tradition, even if things changes, something needs to be stay the same than it was long time ago. So I would say that the old one.
Yeah, agreed. And they changed it back to something closer to that, so it's better now again. And then finally, do you think QPR stay up this season?
I know they has to. There's no way that QPR are gonna play in the League One.
Yeah, they has good to. Answer. Good they answer.
They need to know the weight of that, you know, to play for QPR it's not a League One team. I know so many teams said that, like before, like I don't know, Southampton and Sunderland and stuff like play teams like that who went down, but I don't see QPR to go down. But or if it does, it was gonna be a hell of a way to come back. Because if you go lower, it's much harder to jump back. So they need to stay up.
Definitely. Obviously, Akos, I'm really conscious we've had you for like the best part of an hour, and it's probably getting late where you are. So I just want to say, like, thanks very much for coming on. It's been brilliant chatting to you. I'm sure me and the lads could have chatted you for at least another hour, but just wanted to say thank you very much for coming on and speaking to us.
No, thanks for having me, and hope everything goes well for QPR, and it's gonna be a new chapter for next season.
Hopefully. cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Akos, pleasure.
Thanks, Akos.
Ciao, guys. Bye.
Right, well, that was probably one of the best hours of speaking to an ex-player I think we've had on the podcast. It was such a top bloke, and really good information coming out of him, like really good stories. Really enjoyed that. But I am conscious this podcast is dragging on, and if you're still listening, really appreciate that. But we'll quickly discuss the brilliant win against Bristol City at the weekend. Jack, go to you first, mate. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, I thought, you know, we grew into it. Really accomplished away performance by full time, I would say. I mean, I thought Lucas Anderson sort of embodied that, the way he, you know, a few off touches at the start, but as the game went on, he started to really dictate it. And it was really, really good to see him starting to, you know, get a hold of the ball, link up with Cher and Willock. And for me, that was a real pleasure to start watching someone on their wavelength, if not even higher, because of, you know, the level he's been at before, you know, really sort of merge in and, you know, make a difference. And that assist, the composure, like we've really lacked that in that final third, especially out wide. That just that little ball just to cut in and, you know, head up, pick someone out rather than just hit it at the first man or hit it over, you know. He's composure, isn't he? He's a composed player. And you'd like to think he'd get fitter, you know, as we go on. But
the opposite of a Paul Smith.
I like Paul. I'll stick up with Smith, but I know what you mean. You know, he's got a bit to work on that aspect of his game. But, you know, I thought Willock, best game he's had in seasons, maybe. You know, I know he's had goal scoring appearances this season, but for me, he could have scored, but, you know, overall, I thought his play was better. He looked fitter. He was hungrier. He was getting on the ball. Maybe being dropped was a rocket that he needed, but, you know, really, really impressed. I think defensively, you know, we looked really solid at Bristol City. They didn't really trouble us. But that second half performance, some of the football was superb. And you want this QPR team to do that on a consistent basis. They just can't, and they haven't for various reasons. And I know we'll touch on it this, you know, the weekend game coming, but we've been burnt too many times to trust this team. And you want to, when they can play like that and you think it's there, come on, bit of consistency. But, you know, overall, smashing performance. And, you know, Bristol City, we love playing there. Won our last four away games in a row at Bristol City. It's first time we've won four consecutive away games against a single team since a five-game winning run at Chesterfield between 1959 and 2003. So that sort of streak at a ground doesn't happen very often. But, yeah, really, really enjoyable performance and brilliant away support, very vocal. You know, what a day out that would have been.
That it was a brilliant day out. And speaking of that, I just want to say thank you, if he's listened, to the person who helped me up from the stairs on the concourse where we scored. I got sent flying. Don't know what happened. I'm on the floor and some geezer behind me picks me up. So if he listens, appreciate that, mate. Harry, obviously, before the game, we saw the team come out. Obviously, Ben, we were in the pub beforehand and Ben was absolutely fuming about Jimmy Dunn playing at right back. Obviously, he had a bit of a shaky first 10, 15, but what did you make of like that little kind of tactical switch put in him there?
Yeah, well, I think we spoke about it slightly on the last pod with the average positions of that back four and how Kenneth Powell does, well, inevitably, he's basically a left winger when we've got the ball, or he's popping up in these left wing positions, these left 10 positions, popping up all over there. And Cannon or Dunn has been, well, like sometimes they got forward, but traditionally they're more hanging around, and it's almost in a way a bit of a back three when we have got the ball. So when I saw it, maybe at first glance I was thinking, cool, Jimmy Dunn right back, not too sure how I feel about it. But then you sort of remember that, and he's not gonna have to be bombing down the wing.
Although he
actually was a bit, and there's a few times where Chair and Willock would drive, they get their head up because the ball's on to feed it wide right, and they'd realize it's done, and they'd almost just go, nah, and sort of turn back in. But I did enjoy his performance, and there was that one in the second half where it was just classic Jimmy Dunn, like for the badge, gone through three of them and left them on the floor, and in my living room, got pretty pumped up watching that. So it was good. And that's what he will give you. I mean, he is a bit limited. Like, I think we all know that. Has a bit of an error, a little bit clunky, but he's the type of guy you want around the squad, because when he's called upon, like he was, because Cannon's been shaky, well, put in a lot of effort, did all right on the ball, and like it was a good performance. Like, you can kind of rely on him to play for the badge. So yeah, other than that, I think Jack actually summed up the game pretty perfectly. Anderson at the beginning, I was thinking, God, is this guy actually any good for the first 10 minutes? Because he's not the strongest. He gets it taken off him sometimes a little bit easily, but you could tell he's clever. And he just came into his own after 10, 15, and he was absolutely dictating it. So loved that. Loved Willock. Everything he did other than a shot was coming off for him. So yeah, other than that, it's hard to pick standouts because the standard was good all over the pitch, I felt. Probably our best performance in a while, I'd say. Don't know if there's any more to add from you guys.
I definitely agree with that. And I feel like the Chris Willock shots towards the end of the game, I think he was just so knackered because he put in such a shift that it was just hit the ball, it was just going straight to the keeper. We were saying, obviously, on the way home from the game that how much actually we controlled the second half, and we never really looked like conceding, which is bizarre. The scoreline doesn't reflect the fact that actually it was a much more comfortable game than a 1-0 win. Chris, what did you make of it? Did you think, have to take that away as well, that it looked more comfortable than it was?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the clips, obviously, the club have put out on socials of how well we kept the ball, especially in that kind of left wing area between like Colback, Chair, Powell. That is the pure sign, like proper sign that we are comfortable on the ball. If someone was doing, if roles are reversed and someone was doing that against us, God, we would be absolutely spewing in the stands. 1-0 down at home and the team's doing that. Yeah, great to see. The only issue was like the 1-2 that Willock played with Frey in the box. And it wasn't a difficult ball for Frey to play back. Literally, if he touches it off, like lightest touch, Willock's got a pass into the back of the net. If he'd done that, 2-0, perfect performance. But yeah, if you think most 1-0 away 1-0s, you're clinging on last 10 minutes, backs against the wall, defending deep, corner after corner. And it wasn't like that. No, we were. That was excellent. Even, I mean, Samfield did amazingly well for the clear the ball off the line, but Wells was offside. The line did have his flag up, but obviously Phil doesn't know that. So, yeah, I think Saturday was a sign that everybody in the squad has a place, has a sort of a place to play or a position to play in this, in the running. We're not just about 11 or 12 players. People come in, they can still do a job. We can switch a system we want to do. So obviously, Harry, you talked last week about you really wanted one of Smith or Armstrong on the pitch because obviously that pace outlet. We had neither of them on Saturday in an away game. Most fans must have been thinking, oh, that is a massive call. He went with a control system and it worked. Like, it's not going to work every game, but that's a right call on the day. And yeah, as ever, this is a week. Well, we'll get probably like Thursday night, people will get worried. But early from Saturday till, yeah, Thursday lunchtime, people are positive about our situation now. We just, Jack's absolutely nailed it. Consistency. Can we do it?
On that one about the pace, I thought that was like a big difference in terms of how we had been playing. A lot of it was like, we played short to go long again. But what we've been doing before was like play short to go long in behind for Armstrong in that left channel particularly. But we were sort of sacrificing like that control on the ball that we saw in the second half. Again, from the goal kicks, we'd go short. But then it would go long into Dykes and try and play off of him with the three in behind. So rather than knocking it in, it was almost like stretch the pitch to give Anderson, Willock and Chair like space to play in that pocket. And Dykes and Frey can sort of do that role where they almost like a human battering ram up there to give those guys the space. And probably a bit more of a what we would have expected from Marty coming in terms of not too reliant on pace and more about getting the technical players on the ball. And I think, well, Anderson and Willock for Smith sort of embodies that. But it was definitely interesting to watch, and it worked, and it was good. I don't know if you agreed with that dunk at the game.
I think the only thing that I'd slightly disagree with was the effectiveness of Dykes. And I'll make this point for Ben, because Ben was screaming in my ear all game about the fact that he never won a single header. Like, there was a point in the first half and he took it down on his chest, really did that hard part to control it on his chest really well. And it was needed to make a little simple pass inside, and he just didn't. Like, the pass was the easy bit and he couldn't do that. But the hard part of taking it down his chest, he did. And he's just, it kind of felt like that was Dykes' opportunity to like stake a claim for why he should start. And I just don't know whether he did enough.
Do you think Frey's good enough to have a run of games now? Has he had enough minutes, do you think? Or because I think his movement is far superior in the box, at least.
Good, isn't it?
Yeah, like the runs he's making, he's not always there. Like, the ball's not always there. Consistency again, but from our delivery. But his just general movement looks good. The only thing, you know, negatively I'd say, and I don't know if this is a fitness issue, is that he looks quite, he's not very mobile. Dykes is a lot more mobile than Frey, and that's the same time Dykes not being mobile either. But that's the only thing I look at him and I worry a little bit. Is he mobile enough? But as a movement, intelligence, he's definitely got something for sure.
Yeah, and he was trying to make a few runs, and there was one moment when like Chair picked the ball up, and it was almost like he autopilot thought Sinks was playing, because he played this lovely little ball down the channels, and Frey just kind of went, "Nah, I'm not chasing that." Like, he's like, "I've got no chance of getting that." But again, that's not going to be his game, is it? Like with Dykes, playing the ball into channels isn't really their game. It's playing it to their feet, to their chest, to their head, and getting them involved that way. Like you said, he had that little chance of the 1-2 with Willock, didn't quite play the right way to pass. Again, is that rustiness because he hasn't played enough this season? Like, I don't feel like he's ready to start yet, Frey, at all. I feel like he's still a couple of matches away from being near a 90 minutes or even a 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah. If we want someone to apply pressure on two centre backs and possibly move out to a third centre back or a full back, God, he's going to be blowing out of his arse by 25 minutes in. And yeah, it's not how he wants to work. But yeah, the movement thing, Jack, that's a good point because I wanted to bring up when we talked about the Norwich game last week. Even when he came on, he made a great bit of movement for a like header at the near post in front of a defender, and then even his goal. And it was like, okay, these are the signs we need to see from striker. Probably the things that we've moaned about that Dykes doesn't do or just aren't instinctive for him. So we've got three options up front. Probably none of them are clinical, but they all offer you something different. But that's good, like because I mean we can't guess the team for Saturday. So how can opposition do it? Like, that means they've got to prepare for different things, and that's a positive.
Right, so let's talk about Saturday. Oof. Because we're 1 point off. We're playing Rotherham, bottom of the league. We all know what's going to happen, don't we?
Yeah.
1-0 Rotherham. Mm. We have this chance to get ourselves out of danger, put more pressure on the teams around us who all drop points on Saturday, which all the results seem to go in our favour. So what can Marty do with the players this week to try and almost get a mental pressure off them for how important this game is? Because surely they're aware they should be beating Rotherham, win this game, and we're putting ourselves in a much better position.
Imagine, Jack, Imagine we're away from home, because they seem to play a bit more freedom sometimes when they do that. Yeah, we're winless in our last five against Rotherham, and each of the last four meetings with Rotherham's had a different QPR manager. So difficult one to call. Rotherham are pretty poor. They're not much really. I mean, we've beaten better teams this year, but as you say, it's the mental aspect, I think, here. Our players don't seem to, well, not all of them. There are players you can hang your hat on, like Steve Cook, Clark Salter. You know, they've been brilliant, you know, great partnership. But there are players in there that seem to fade in and out of form game to game. So I think it'd be a draw if I had to predict it now, mate. I think we blitz it at the beginning, we get one or two goals up early doors and the confidence just flows. I think we're going to, you know, could be in for a really real cagey game.
Now, Chris, what do you think, mate?
Well, the room have got 4 points away from home all season. Like, on one hand, that's such a good thing. On the other hand, it's painful to look at because, yeah, the fear of what's going to happen. I think Jack's nailed it. If we can be 1-2 up within, two up at half-time or one up within 20 minutes, I'll be confident. If it's 0-0 at half-time, we know what the second half is going to be. They'll have everybody behind the ball. There'll be time wasting every opportunity. We won't move the ball quick enough because either we don't or we don't find the rhythm for that. But all he's got to be instilling this week is what happened in the other games versus opponents like this. What happened against Stoke? What happened against Huddersfield? That can't happen on Saturday. You have to, like, high energy. And that's why the team, again, is so key. I think it's just people who move the ball quickly. That's what we're going to have to play with. Yeah. I think, like Jack said, we've been burnt too many times. Suddenly looking positive, we're close to getting out of it. The kind of point I made a few pods ago was when we had 18 games left, I said we needed 7 wins and 5 draws to get to 50 points. We've got, in those 5 games, we've got 8 points. So in 13 games, I think we need 18 points. That's 5 wins and 3 draws and 5 losses. Which doesn't sound, it sounds a hell of a lot easier if you beat Rotherham on Saturday. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to go for a 1-1, unfortunately. 1-1. I need to see it proven first.
But Harry, do you think Marty needs to take a gamble, maybe go 2 up top, start Dykes and Sinks together, give us more of that attacking impetus at home? Or what's your take on it? What do you think we should be doing to try and get this result we need?
I don't think he'll go with 2 up top. Like we sort of said last week, I think he's pretty regimented in that 4-3-3. It's a shame that Frey isn't a bit fitter, because I do think, like, with these sides that are going to just sit in deep, where there's no space in behind for Sinclair to run on to. You'd quite like a bigger target man up there if they are just, yeah, if they are just going to sit in deep, someone who's a bit clever that might make the most of these crosses. Where we've said about Dykes's movement in the box. I mean, if it lands on his head, he's actually not a half bad finisher with his head, but it's about sort of getting onto it, which he doesn't really do enough. So I'd like Frey to start, but like we said, I'm not too sure he'll be fit. So sort of Dykes up top, I'd imagine, over Armstrong, just because of that lack of space in behind sort of nullifies his threat. And then get the crosses of the ball on the pitch. You got to have Anderson on the pitch. Want to have Willock on the pitch. Yeah. It's... I've written it off in my head, to be honest. I wrote it off after we beat Bristol City. I thought that we'll just end up losing. So I'm going to try my hardest to keep my hopes down, despite how big of a game it is and what it could mean for our season. But yeah, I think it probably will be quite a scrappy game. He seemed Marty's, well, if his team selection is anything to go by, he'll have the crosses of the ball on and he'll have the big guys on the pitch. So it has the potential to be a bit of a scrappy game. But we just got to hope that our quality of, if he starts that three of Chair, Willock and Anderson, is enough to unlock the door. I think that's what it'll come down to. And then it'll, other than that, just who wants it most. And then if we can get those three on the ball, we might be lucky. But yeah, like I said, I've written it off. I reckon probably a 1-1, like Chris has said. But I'd be more surprised if we win than lose. Like I just think it was such a, it's written in the stars.
No, see, I'm gonna be positive. I'm gonna be optimistic. I think this is that game. This is the game that all, like, we've been waiting to get out of it. And we've blown chance after chance after chance. I think this is the game we do it. If we don't, I can't see us staying up then if we blow this opportunity now. So I've got to be that optimistic and positive that that's what's going to happen. Right, I'm really conscious we've been on this for a long, long time. And if anyone is still really listening, I really appreciate it. So on that note...
They all tuned out when Akos went off, mate.
That's it. On that note, let's have a big positive result of the weekend. Come on, you ours.
You ours.
You ours.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.